This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Your questions can come to us via radio program at AOL.com. That's the destination for questions about medicine, about health, about supplements, about any issue that you may be grappling with us with. Send an email to radio program at AOL.com, and we will take it on. With me today, Layla Mutin, who is my usual partner in crime, working on your questions. We work together on a daily basis at my practice in Manhattan. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you?
Good. So Thanksgiving in the rearview mirror.
Yep.
And behind us, and as we churn forward through this frenetic holiday season, we offered people advice a couple of weeks ago on how to survive the holiday season.
Yep.
Both of us wrote articles on that subject in our newsletter. And, you know, I want to share with you something very, very exciting. This just crossed the wires in terms of something. This is an email that I just got, and it has to do with these very self-same podcasts. So, you know, people like to know that, you know, they're onto something good because... You know, you who are listening to this podcast, you may think, well, you know, this is sort of an oddball thing. It's a acquired taste. You know, just a few aficionados seem to be seeking out our podcast. Here's the dispatch. Over the holiday weekend, we exceeded the 5 million download mark for the podcast.
Wow.
And as of the latest count, we're at 5,038,946 downloads. So congratulations to us, and congratulations to you, because you're part of that formula, because you have your own individual podcast.
Yeah.
Probably you're responsible for about 4.5 million and the rest are mine.
There you go.
It's you who've taken us just right over the top, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, no, but it is popular, and we haven't broken it out by individual.
No.
But yeah, we're very, very gratified, of course, because,
absolutely.
Again, this goes back a couple of years ago where I... in lieu of the daily radio program that I used to do, because of changes in radio, we went to just a weekend program.
Yes.
And so, you know, I said, well, gee, I'm sort of in the rhythm of doing these interviews and doing these solo broadcasts on various topics, clinical topics of interest, you know, whether it be diabetes or hypertension or heart disease or, you know, any number, osteoporosis. So I said, let me just start doing these podcasts. And well, the question is, you know, if you build it, will they come? And indeed.
Wow, they came.
They came. And, you know, it's a great free resource that a lot of people take advantage of. So thank you. If you go to the podcast page at iTunes, and, you know, I'm tooting my horn a little bit, but I'm really pleased to see that we have a lot of ratings there. We have a 5.0 rating, which is 5 out of 5 for excellence in podcasts. So that, you know, I'm very, very pleased. And if you want to weigh in with your comments, pro or con, we're, you know, it's a free forum. Go to iTunes and register either your recommendation or lack thereof. We certainly hope that you recommend this podcast to your friends and family because it's a resource that we think can be useful. Okay, so without further ado, you know, we've been a little bit sort of resting in our podcast production over Thanksgiving holiday, And there's a little delay in terms of Paideka, so we're well past Thanksgiving. But over Thanksgiving, something very interesting happened. And that was, all of a sudden, they moved the goalposts on blood pressure.
Yes. A lot of people are upset. And Mickey actually wrote us in. She said, "Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, would appreciate your comments about the new blood pressure guidelines. I value your knowledge, philosophy, and advice."
Well, it's fortuitous that by now, many of you will have read my lengthy article in the newsletter. If you subscribe to the newsletter, you will have gotten it. And also, you could simply go to drhoffman.com and read my most recent article about the new blood pressure guidelines. And it's very detailed, and I'm actually going to do an entire series of podcasts on blood pressure. And we'll talk about the guidelines, we'll talk about diet, we'll talk about the exercise, we'll talk about stress reduction. We'll talk about little interesting tidbits, like a new study that suggests that using mouthwash can raise your blood pressure.
Yes, I read that.
Right?
I read
that. Actually, no, the new twist on that is it can actually increase your risk of diabetes. We've known that. Old news is that you can raise your blood pressure with mouthwash. Why? Because it kills the nitric oxide producing bacteria in your mouth.
Beneficial bacteria is destroyed too by the mouthwash.
Yes. Anyway, so, we're going to cover this issue very thoroughly in the next few weeks, because overnight, 39 million more Americans were classified as hypertensive.
Even doctors are upset.
Many doctors are upset. And these are thoughtful doctors like myself who believe that this recommendation may do more harm than good. Now, this is all based, first of all, what are they talking about? It's, in the old days, it was, if your blood pressure is greater than 140 over 90, you're hypertensive. If your blood pressure was anywhere from 120 to 139 over 80 to 89, you were considered pre-hypertensive. And so that's borderline, like pre-diabetes. Okay. So, the good news about the old classification is that, there's less of a likelihood that you'll be treated with medications with their attendant side effects. For pre-hypertension. So this is all based on a study where they took people with pre-hypertension and they treated them with medication for blood pressure to lower their blood pressure to 120 or 80 or less. And what they found was a reduction in the risk of cardiovascular problems. So on the basis of that, they got all excited and they said, well, you know, we've got to like put more people on meds. And therefore they shifted the guidelines. But you know, I do a detailed analysis of that study. And first of all, in that study, they didn't look at just everybody who had blood pressure 120 over 139. They looked at people who had other cardiovascular risk factors. They were high risk because of very high cholesterol or because of other risk factors that put them to risk for heart disease. So they had
high inflammatory according to, markers, maybe.
Any number of things that might be putting them at risk. So when that self-selected group, which may be less than 10% of all the people between 120 and 139 over 80 to 89, you know, you have to really select that group, then that group showed a benefit which was slight. So I break it down six ways to Sunday, but it turns out that there was a number needed to treat that was pretty high in the sort of mid double digits. So you'd need to treat like 39 or 60 people, to get, to save one person from a cardiovascular event. And oh, by the way, there was no reduction in cardiovascular death for some reason. There was no, but there was reduction in events, but not death, but they didn't publicize that. So, you know, I don't want to get too much in the weeds because the message for the public should be lifestyle. Now, in the study that was invoked as the reason to change the guidelines, I read the entire study. It's a very exhaustive study. It's like page after page after page. My eyes glazed over.
Underwritten by the pharmaceutical industry.
To some extent. To some extent. Yes, that's true. You're right on there. Is that there? There are always biases that get introduced. And conflicts of interest is the term. But most importantly, I looked in vain for the word lifestyle. In that entire study, of voluminous study, page after page after page, like 80 pages, one mention of the word lifestyle. When we know that a simple lifestyle intervention, which is to lose 5% of your body weight, for a 200-pound male, that's what? 5 pounds.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, that's 10 pounds.
10 pounds.
10 pounds.
Yeah. A lot when you're 200 pounds.
Right.
Right.
Then about half of people could get off blood pressure medication.
Yep.
That's roughly been demonstrated, you know, approximately. So as a rule of thumb. So when we so heavily rely on these medications to alleviate a problem, which is primarily a lifestyle problem. I mean, look, frankly, there are some people who, in spite of their best efforts, and we have some of them as patients, we see them, they are doing the best they can.
They
are eating
they're
really...
They're even skinny.
They're skinny. They're eating really well. Yeah. I don't know, maybe they're nervous, whatever.
We remove the caffeine.
Or just with aging.
I mean, culprits.
Maybe if they had, for their entire lifetimes, been on a healthy program, but, you know, for the preceding 40, 50, 60 years, they weren't doing everything right.
Yeah.
Perhaps even lead in the environment has caused high blood pressure. You know, it's certainly been demonstrated that heavy metals and pollution may play a role.
Do it, yeah.
So they, unfortunately, may need blood pressure medication. They've done the best they can.
Yes.
Okay, got it. But this, I am really upset by this new move. And I think we have to inform people that there are other options.
Yes. And there are side effects to those medications.
Of course.
If you're in the... I think it's also... Can we talk about how to take blood pressure properly? Because one thing I noticed...
Can we talk?
Yes.
Let's talk.
The last practitioner's office I was in, I saw the nurse or the medical assistant taking somebody's blood pressure while they were standing up.
Right. And also, and I have to say that we're guilty of it a little bit too, because it's like... Okay, somebody arrives a little late, they're in a hurry, maybe they got a little lost, they come right off the busy streets of Manhattan.
Yeah.
They dealt with like coming from miles, you know, going through the bridges and tunnels, hoping that they can make the appointment on time.
Yeah.
You know, finally they get up to the building and they get lost, they don't see my name on the marquee. You know, they finally...
All kinds of anxiety.
they finally come through the door and we say, okay... Doctor wants to check your blood pressure before you come in. So they sit him down, and amidst their great apprehension, they...
And catching their breath.
Yes, right. So here's a story on that.
Yeah.
Article in NPR, from NPR. Mm-hmm. Odds are they're taking your blood pressure all wrong. And by the way, interestingly, in the new study, they emphasize that you got to take the blood pressure very carefully.
Yes.
When was the last time you were asked to sit without saying a word for 5 minutes before your blood pressure was measured? If your answer was, I never remember doing that, you're in good company.
Never.
So that you're supposed to actually chill out in the room where they're supposed to do that, and they're supposed to leave you alone and not come in and show you, you know, brandish needles and things like that and scary things, or, you know, shout, code blue, you know, in the room, you know, like in a hospital. And, you know, it's scary. Look, for some people, my dog, when he would, we would take him to the vet, and, you know, he'd know he would get a shot or something that would hurt. And so he knew, even when we were driving down the street, he would start whimpering. By the time he got to the veterinarian's office, he was, you know, he had that feet skidding on the linoleum thing, you know.
Oh.
It was like, he was like, he wanted to hightail it out of there.
Yeah.
People are like that to some extent with doctors. Now, there's some people who are like, they're cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
They're okay. They're down with it. They're not going to react in that way. But for some people, they may have seen a relative die.
Sure.
They may have had a very painful experience or a horrible, scary diagnosis rendered to them, like, you have cancer in a doctor's office. And that's a conditioned reflex.
Oh, sure.
And they see somebody with a white coat, and they've got white coat hypertension, or they're apprehensive because, oh, my God, what are they going to find out? You know?
Right. Or just the idea of, oh, you're going to take my blood pressure, and they immediately get nervous.
Yes.
For that particular test.
Okay, so here's what they say. Sit in a chair, feet flat on the ground, legs uncrossed.
Uncrossed, yes.
As I'm sitting here with my legs crossed, with your back supported and without talking for at least 5 minutes before you get your blood pressure measured. Who does that? Don't exercise, consume caffeine, or smoke within 30 minutes of your test. Empty your bladder. You know, so you've got a full bladder, you know. It's like, right? If they don't, They don't tell you where the bathroom is. Well, the knock, knock, bathroom's occupied. Yeah. Okay, let's check your blood pressure.
And then, you know, people will stroll into the doctor's office after visiting Starbucks. That's right. Not the time to take your blood pressure.
Also, you know, you're wearing like a tight, like, sweater. You roll your sweater up, like, scrunch it around your biceps. Mm-hmm. That'll screw up your blood pressure determination.
And not just that, the position of the arm.
Yes.
I've seen improper positioning of the arm where it was here rather than of my body.
It's supposed to rest on the table.
Yes, it's supposed to rest or be supported by someone.
Yep.
Maybe.
Don't let your arm dangle or rest in your lap during the reading. It should be supported on a surface such as a desk.
Yes. Otherwise, it will cause the blood pressure to go up if you're holding up your own arm.
Right.
This alone will cause.
And the other thing is that no single number determines your blood pressure. You want the best, at least out of three readings. And ultimately, what you're going to do is you're going to get a home thing where you don't scare yourself, although some people scare themselves. Did we have a listener who scared themselves?
No. Actually, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. As a matter of fact, while we're talking about this, let me bring up this particular. Ha, here we go.
Yeah.
This comes from Raymond. I'm one of those people who can't get an accurate blood pressure reading because the mere sound or pressure from the inflating cup induces a rush of adrenaline that instantly boosts my blood pressure by 30 points or more.
Oh no.
This happens at home too, and not just when a white coat is taking the reading. Other than somehow reducing my anxiety about blood pressure, what can I do? As you may have guessed, I'm one of those people with mitral valve prolapse and a highly sensitive autonomic nervous system.
Right. Okay. So, look, this is, white coat hypertension has a meaning because what I sometimes say to patients is, surely this blood pressure determination in the doctor's office is not the only instance in your life where you get a little bit of a hot reaction. Mm-hmm. Call these people hot reactors. They react to circumstances, you know, and
if you've been sitting in traffic for an hour and you're peed off about it or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Phone call from your mother.
Oh, okay.
You know, like just something like that, you know.
Yes.
Or the boss wants to see you.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh,
you know,
boy.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Something. So under those circumstances in real life, you might have spikes of blood pressure, which could be deleterious to your blood vessels, to your brain, to your heart, to your kidneys. Mm-hmm. So it's not without meaning that you can shoot your blood pressure up. We can't just disregard that and say, well, that's an aberration. It is of significance. Mm-hmm. And it suggests a type of blood pressure that is not that amenable to weight loss or sodium restriction, but is more amenable to relaxation techniques, perhaps exercise, yoga,
meditation,
Tai
Chi.
But ultimately medication. You know, beta blockers are sometimes necessary at low doses for these patients because they have a loose switch on their autonomic nervous system. They're off to the races. Mm-hmm. I would recommend to this person that they go to the website, the HSP website, the Highly Sensitive Person website.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a whole following for these people who are these kinds of reactors. Mm-hmm. They feel weak and dizzy and easily lightheaded, and they're very sensitive to caffeine and medication, and many of them have multiple chemical sensitivity. They have anxiety disorders.
Right. They're all low in magnesium.
Well, that's one
thing that can help.
Yes.
That's a reason for anxiety in and of itself.
Sure.
Having mitral valve prolapse, you will have lower magnesium. You need more magnesium. You need it all of your life. This
those,
also
yeah,
helps
those
blood pressure.
People are like a, they're a, like a money pit for magnesium. They just need to keep pouring magnesium in to stabilize their nervous system.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, there's an HSP podcast so that you can, you know, get your HSP advice and information if you're an HSP. I did found that kind of interesting, too.
That is interesting. Wow. Wow. So all this hoopla then about the new guidelines.
Well, I really think that, you know, unfortunately, doctors are, you know, they follow sort of paint by numbers kinds of things. What concerns me too is that doctors will be incentivized by EMRs, electronic medical records, and by guidelines to get all their patients' blood pressure down.
Yes.
And they'll actually get financial incentives or financial penalties based on whether they allow patients to walk around with this now borderline blood pressure.
Yeah.
And that's scary.
It is.
The other thing that's scary is there, let's say a doctor does read the guidelines appropriately and say, and mm-hmm. recognizes that for those people with that new category of what used to be pre-hypertension, this first line of 120 to 139 over 80 to 89, that lifestyle should be undertaken.
Mm-hmm.
The lifestyle recommendations are so poor and the doctors are so ill-equipped to administer them and monitor them. They don't have nutritionists like you in their office.
Exactly. And they need to refer to a nutritionist. So
they'll just say, lose weight, lose some weight, exercise, lose some weight, exercise.
And whatever. See ya.
Yeah. And or they'll say, follow the DASH diet.
Yes.
And the DASH diet, while very low in sodium, it's
DASH is the dietary approaches to stopping
hypertension.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, I've just wrote an article about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's something.
Yeah. So the problem with that diet is that it is based on lots of whole grains, like 6 to 12 whole grains, 4 to 6 fruits per day.
Mm-hmm. I looked at 3 servings of meat a week.
Very low, lean, trimmed meat.
On their protein.
Low-fat dairy galore.
Yes.
That diet doesn't work for a lot of people because it keeps, mm-hmm. because too much carbs keeps the insulin up.
Exactly.
And insulin drives high blood pressure.
Exactly. Because insulin hemodynamically causes changes in the sympathetic nervous system.
Boom.
And then causing, I'm just writing about this now for the newsletter. And then
you
that
and I
causes
are,
more.
Are, Yeah, you and I were just writing about the same stuff.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So that in turn causes the sodium retention. And what happens when you go on a lower carb diet, not a DASH diet, it has a very nice dehydrating effect because that then is abated.
You mean diuretic effect?
A diuretic effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. A diuretic,
same thing, but diuretic.
Same kind of thing. Diuretic sounds better than dehydrated. Yeah.
No, it makes you pee out. That's why some people say they start the Atkins diet.
Yeah.
And they say, oh my God, I lost like 8 to 10 pounds the first week. That's not fat.
It's not all fat. The first few days of that, the first 5 to 6 pounds are going to be water. When we're storing a lot of glycogen, when we're eating a lot of carbohydrates, we're carrying a lot of hydrate water.
Right.
That's being stored.
Carbohydrate.
What you're going to see is a lot of puffiness. If you notice any puffiness on you or on your face, all of that is going to go away.
You look more chiseled. We see cheekbones
emerge. Exactly. You start to see cheekbones. Yeah. There's less puffiness around the eyes. All of that. There's a glow that happens. Because of this diuretic effect, the blood volume also will tend to come down because there is less sodium retention.
Right. And the DASH diet doesn't permit that. It was like, breakfast was like, eggs. No, not even eggs. Because
oatmeal or something.
Oatmeal. Yeah. Oatmeal with whole wheat toast with jam.
Oh, my.
And
then you could go back to bed, I would after that.
And a glass of pineapple juice.
Oh, no.
No, I swear, that's what they said on the DASH diet.
No. Yeah. That's a breakfast that would send many who are insulin resistant right back to bed.
No, it sends your blood sugar up. And then by lunchtime, you're like, I got to eat,
You're starving. You're starving.
You get.
And then when you get a crash in blood sugar, you become hangry. Then cortisol comes out to raise your blood sugar. That cortisol is also messing with your blood pressure.
Yeah.
Anybody walking around with high cortisol, whether it's from stress, caffeine, lack of sleep, or the cortisol is causing a lack of sleep, these all can equate to blood pressure problems.
So again, I got to say that just as with cholesterol, we have very flawed recommendations from the top.
Yes.
In terms of health recommendations.
Right.
And still, the DASH diet, for some reason, clings to this outmoded dogma that low fat is good.
Yeah.
And there are many studies that suggest that that normal fat dairy is not responsible for cardiovascular disease and can also lower blood pressure.
Yes. Yes. The beneficial fats in dairy. Low fat is no longer the way to go, but I don't understand the resistance
it's,
all this time.
It is a stuck, broken record. Okay.
It's unfortunate.
Anyway, you can read more from both of us if you subscribe to the newsletter. Please do, because that's another free resource that comes directly into your inbox. We don't pester you with a lot of promotions or things like that. Or if you choose not to, just go to our website. If you want to safeguard your anonymity, if you're a hermit or something, you don't want to be on any kind of mailing list, fine, okay, great. Just
you don't like receiving email?
Yeah, right. Or, just go to our website and I'm sorry, we don't mail newsletters anymore. It's no more snail mail.
No, no. Yeah. So just go to drhoffman.com. You could download and read any of the articles that have been posted.
And we're going to cover this issue in depth because it really is worth covering.
Yeah.
It's a teachable moment, I
think. Yes, it is.
It is. It's like it's going to get people's attention, which is good. It's a teachable moment. Let's school people about what is blood pressure, what are the best ways to address this problem if you're someone who now has newly been ensnared in the new net. You know, we call this disease creep. You know, it means
disease
that,
creep, medicalization creep.
Yeah, it's no bureaucracy, and medicine is a bureaucracy, wants to shrink its domain. Mm. You know, we're talking like government, right?
Yes.
Always wants to like do more, new programs, more outreach.
Yeah.
And that's why we have really, really big government. And same thing happens with medicine, is that we want medicine to medicalize everything.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, we have, you know, ED and female sexual dysfunction and new medications and da 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 da. And it's like, you know, everything, you know, anxiety, shyness, it's a malady, you know.
Shyness is a malady.
Yeah.
Has a DSM.
Yes.
Or something.
Right.
And how many different types of bipolar are there now?
Right.
I've lost count. They used to call it angry.
Right.
Or they used to call it mad.
Or they used to call it, my kid's tantruming.
Temper tantrum.
Oh, temper tantrum. But now it's no bipolar type whatever. Okay. So end of screed here. And when we return, we're going to answer more questions. We dealt with blood pressure and one of our listeners who freaks himself out with blood pressure determination. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin. It's a weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll be right back with part two.